Well, thank you very much. Even though I didn't understand very much of the introduction, it was so long, I'm sure there must have been a few good things said about me. I would like to start by thanking Microsoft Research Asia and Peking University for having me here. It is just such an honor to have this opportunity to speak to such distinguished scholars and administrators from Peking University, and scholars and students especially from so many great universities here in Beijing. It's really just an incredible honor. And I just cannot believe that I have a chance also to speak in front of such huge screens. It's the biggest talk I've ever given, I'm sure. So what I wanted to start off with here is, in the theme of computing life, to try to link computing life to what we do at Microsoft Research, which is research, and answer some questions or give some insights into how research connects to life in the 21st century and how life affects what we do in research. And in the process, I hope some of you will become more interested in pursuing research careers on your own as you continue your studies. Research is something that is just so wonderful. It's essentially about exploration and about discovery. And when you do exploration and discovery in computing, one of the wonderful things is that you have to create technology, new technology, and that technology helps in the discovery and exploration and can also create technologies that are valuable and improve lives all over the world. Now, as I was coming to Beijing from my home in the state of Washington in the U.S., I was reading the news earlier this week in China about the mission to go to the moon. It's such a wonderful initiative that China is embarking on. Such great things to discover and such amazing technologies to be developed in order to reach the moon and explore its properties. And it made me think about that exploration process. And so, as I think back to my own childhood, one of the most important episodes of my life was watching the first landing on the moon. I was only 9 years old when this happened. This is a famous picture of Neil Armstrong, who was the first man on the moon in 1969. And being a small child, I was completely riveted by this project. Can you imagine it today, in just 9 years from start to finish, we as men and women were able to combine our forces, combine our intelligence, combine our initiative and courage, work together to put a man on the moon? And for me as a child, I was just completely mesmerized. In fact, I would say that watching this happen as a 9-year-old boy inspired me to become a researcher or a scientist or an engineer myself. Now, in this same year, 1969, as it turned out, I didn't know about this at the time. I only learned this later in my graduate studies. In the same year, 1969, there was another amazing technological and scientific achievement, and that was the birth of what was then called the ARPANET, the very first and early origins of the networking technology that eventually became what we know today as the Internet. 1969, imagine it. Man on the moon and the birth of what we now know of as the Internet. And in 1969, there was what in computer science research circles is known as the mother of all demos. And in that demonstration, Doug Engelbart was able to show how two people separated by long geographic distances, one person in Utah, another person in California, and he was able to demonstrate how a networking technology like the Internet could enable two such people, even though separated by a long distance, how they could work together and collaborate on the construction of a document or a program. And as you see here in the quote about Doug Engelbart, he talks about ways to use technology to basically integrate with the kinds of work and the kinds of hunches and the intangibles and the human feel for a situation in order to really enable discovery, enable collaboration, enable good work. 1969, these two things happened. Really quite an amazing year. And so now, as I think about these two, and I would like each of you to think about these two events that happened in the same year, 1969, and now contemplate a question, which is, of these two momentous events in 69, as we look back over the past 45 years, which one of these two events had more impact? Now, it's a little bit of a silly question, and in fact, as I admitted earlier, the moon landing actually inspired me to become a researcher myself. And certainly, there were just tremendous spin-off technologies from that moon landing. But I would like to answer this question with a question. As you think about these two events, as I look at the world today and think of my son, who is now 17 years old, my son has never used rocket booster technology to reinforce his math studies. He's never used lunar landing technology to socialize with his friends, to download music. There is such power in computing technology. Computing technology has the power of democratization, the power to be available to almost every person on the planet. And when that happens, when you put very powerful tools and technologies in the hands of every person in the world, you're almost guaranteed to have amazing fountain of innovations. And what we have seen over the past 45 years is, in fact, that incredible stream of innovations coming from computing technology. And for this reason, I find that research in computing is just such an important and such an incredible place to be. So let's talk a little bit about computing research. And what I'd like to do is explain just one thread of research that Microsoft Research, and especially Microsoft Research Asia, has been a strong part of, to explain a little bit about how computing life and computing research intersect and have collaboration with each other. So I know that many of you won't recognize this picture, but some of you might. There is an old television show in the U.S. called Star Trek. And Star Trek is a show about a very brave crew of explorers in the 25th century, so far into the future, and they fly in an amazing starship all over the universe, exploring new worlds, meeting new civilizations, and just trying to understand how the universe works. And in this show, there are many wonderful things. And this particular picture is a picture from one of the Star Trek movies, a movie called The Journey Home. And in this movie, the crew of the Starship Enterprise encounters a terrible menace far into the future, a menace that could destroy the entire Earth. And so in order to save the Earth, they do some exploration and some study, and they find out that the only way to save the Earth from this menace is to go back in time to today, to today's Earth, and try to find the keys to unlocking and preventing this menace that will come in the far future. And so they fly through the universe, they find a wormhole, they go back in time, and they land on Earth in the modern day. And the first thing they need to do in order to save the Earth is find a computer. And so they go into an office and they find a computer. And of course, the engineer, his name is Scotty, runs to the computer. And what does he do? He starts talking to it. And of course he talks to it because anyone would imagine that computers in the 25th century would be machines that humans could interact with naturally, or what we call natural user interaction. And in this funny scene in the movie, in fact, after he talks to the computer and the computer doesn't do anything, he looks at the mouse and he realizes, oh, of course. And so he picks up the mouse and tries talking to the mouse. And of course, that's a very funny scene in the movie. But it's funny because, in fact, we have all, in fact, suffered the indignity of having to do unnatural things in order to get computers to do what we want them to do. And in fact, in computing research, as in computing life, we also have this frustration. Why can't we interact with computers more naturally? Why can't computers understand us when we talk to them? Can we get machines to hear and understand us when we talk? And so let's explore this particular research problem in computing a little bit. Now, as it turns out, as many of you know, I'm sure many of you own smartphones or tablets or laptops, and in fact, you know that you have applications that allow you to talk to them. And now, how does that work? Well, in fact, there's been tremendous progress in getting computers to recognize human speech. And much of that progress is based on an approach to improving the performance of computers called machine learning. Now, what is machine learning? Machine learning is the study of machines that improve with experience or improve with more data. And in an era today where we have a large amount of data, the big data era, machine learning has become extremely important. So what is machine learning? Well, machine learning started in its practical form through character recognition problems. And so a long time ago, there was a desire to have a machine that could read envelopes to help the postal service sort the mail. And so in an envelope like this, we might have a machine read, let's say, this digit 2, and you would want it to be recognized as digit 2. Now, the early attempts to have a machine programmed to recognize digits like this were very difficult. And you could imagine writing a very complicated program with many complicated rules. You want a little curly Q on the top, you want a loop on the lower left, and so on. But the problem with writing such rules is that as you considered the full diversity of ways that people might write letters, you would need more and more rules, and soon those rules would start to contradict each other, and a certain brittleness would take place. And in fact, the early attempts to write machines that could sort the mail automatically were really very faulty as a result. So, in computer science, we developed an idea called machine learning to try a different way. And in machine learning, instead of writing a program to recognize all the different ways that people might write the digit 2, instead, we collect many, many examples of written digits. We laboriously label each one so that we know what each written digit actually is. And together, that gives us what's called a label training set. And then we have a very special kind of program called a machine learning system that can take in this label training set and from the many, many, sometimes millions of examples, learn automatically how to recognize digits and produce automatically a program that, in this case, accurately classifies digits. And so over the past 25 to 30 years, there's been tremendous progress in computing research in machine learning and how to build these machine learning systems. And in fact, machine learning has become incredibly important in the world, not just in computing research, incredibly important in computing life. This is a video of the atrium in the Microsoft Research Lab in Redmond, Washington. And as you can see, when you walk up to the elevator automatically opens. And what happens is there's a camera that is watching people, and here you can see the optical flow of the movement of people. And this machine learning system watched people for several months walk around the atrium of our building, and every time someone walked and pushed the elevator button, it learned the behavior of a person that wants the elevator. And then, after about 10 weeks of just learning and observing people, the system was switched on so that it called the elevator ahead of time. It made a prediction of whether a person wanted an elevator or not. And here you can see it is very precise and has understood completely when a person wants an elevator or when a person is just walking by. And all done without any programming, all done through a machine learning system that just makes observations and learns on its own. Really an incredible advance. Machine learning is everywhere. Now, getting back to getting a computer to understand human speech, in fact, machine learning has made tremendous impact there. So following the machine learning paradigm, we can take very large amounts of speech training data. So many, many recordings of people speaking. We label them with their transcripts, feed all of that into a machine learning system. And today we use machine learning systems based on deep neural nets. And from that, automatically produce an accurate speech recognizer that takes in human speech and gives us the text output from that speech. So today, we can see the progress of machine learning when applied to speech recognition. On this graph, on the y-axis is what's called the word error rate. And so the word error rate is, roughly speaking, the percentage of errors in the transcript produced by the speech recognition system. And so on the x-axis, you see the year. And so back in 1993, you can see that speech recognition systems were very poor. In fact, on a standard U.S. government test called Switchboard, the error rate was almost 100%. In other words, the speech recognition system was getting almost every word wrong. But then, over a period of many years, we have now achieved, in laboratory conditions, error rates well below 10%. And I would like you to think about that. If you, in fact, were to try to write a transcript of my speech today, ask yourselves, can you make a transcript with fewer than one error out of every 10 words? It's very difficult. And computing systems based on machine learning now are able to accomplish that, which is incredible. That progress has been so amazing that now Microsoft and several other companies have deployed machine learning-based speech systems very widely. And in fact, on Microsoft's Windows phones and on Bing voice search and on Xbox systems, when you talk to an Xbox, when you talk to your phone, you are using a machine learning system to recognize your speech. And if you've had that experience, I'm sure you've been impressed with how well those systems work. The commercial impact, the impact on our computing lives really has been tremendous. And every day we see that our machines around us, our computers around us, are able more and more to understand what we say. Now, I want to get back to this this error curve and make a point about research. You can see in 1993 for the switchboard test, the error rates were very poor, but then there was a very rapid improvement as machine learning was applied to the point that around the year 1999 or 2000, the word error rates were about 26%. And you can imagine as a researcher that there's a lot of excitement, a lot of motivation, because every year you can see in the computing research field of speech recognition dramatic improvements being made. But then in the year 2000, there was a period stretching more than 10 years of no discernible practical improvement in speech recognition systems. And now I would like you to think about what that is like. If you are working in research and you're every day doing more studies and developing new ideas and new algorithms and new depth of understanding of the nature of human speech, every day you talk to colleagues and you realize that new things are being learned, and yet the practical outcome of those new learnings is not seen. And so the point here is that research is oftentimes a very long game. Research requires perseverance, requires commitment, requires a devotion to the truth and to the depth of understanding. And sometimes it requires some faith that with enough persistence and enough honest attention to detail and depth of understanding, that someday one might pass a tipping point and get to a stage, as we see here in 2009, where suddenly rapid improvements are possible again. And so one of the things in my work at Microsoft Research is to try to constantly encourage people to stick with ideas over the long haul, if they are very important. And having machines that can understand us when we talk to them is very important. It sometimes takes a great deal of patience and a great deal of commitment over a long time. Okay, let me get back to this image in Star Trek. The other thing that you may not know about the movie Star Trek is that not only could the explorers, the crew of the Starship Enterprise, not only could they talk to computers, but they could actually go all throughout the cosmos. They could visit any alien race on any planet, and through a magic technology called the Universal Translator, they were able to just talk to any alien being or civilization. And the computer system that they had on the Starship was able to automatically translate the languages so they could converse anywhere. Truly amazing. And so we can ask the question, can we ever have such a real universal translation in our computing lives? And it seems like it should make sense, because in fact, as many of you know, we actually have made tremendous progress also by using machine learning in developing systems that can make translations between languages. And so one can ask the question, is it possible to put together speech recognition with the automatic translation between languages, as well as machine learning-based systems to take written language and produce speech? And we have, in fact, for several years at Microsoft Research, been working very hard in trying to put those pieces together. And in fact, much of that research has been based right here in Beijing in Microsoft Research Asia. And in fact, 2 years ago at this conference, the founder of Microsoft Research, Rick Rashid, in his keynote address, actually gave part of his lecture in Chinese. Now, he, of course, was speaking English, but the computer system was automatically translating his English speech into Mandarin, expressed in his own voice. And it was an amazing experience. In fact, I feel so lucky. I was actually in the audience 2 years ago at this conference and had the wonderful experience of just witnessing this monumental technical achievement. Now, I don't have the demonstration here today, but I do have a video that I'd like to show you that gives you an idea of, from 2 years ago today, the rapid progress we've been making in the system. And so please watch this video.
As you can see, even though I don't speak a second language, I'm speaking to you now in Chinese in my own voice.
我说话,你知道的,
it's pretty cool. This is all made possible because of the advances in big data and machine learning.
因为太大数据和机器学习的进步,这都是齿轮的。
The same advances we've been talking about today.
我们一直在谈今天天亮的进展,
and while the system isn't perfect,
虽然系统并非完美,
in fact, you can see it's making a few mistakes.
事实上,你可以看到刚刚几个错误,
the rate of improvement has been rapid.
发展速度很快,
we think it will be practical soon.
我们认为这将很快使用,
We believe the underlying technologies will change the world.
我们认为基础技术将改变世界。
They will help you become more productive.
方案会帮助你提高生产力。
And they will help you connect with people around the world.
方案会帮助你与世界各地的人联系。
At Microsoft, we dream of a world where language no longer separates us.
在微软，我们的理想世界里，语言不再把我们分开。
But instead brings us closer together.
而是让我们一起增进。
We look forward to all of you joining us in this exciting idea.
我们期待你加入我们在这激动人心的梦想。
Thank you.
谢谢。
So I hope the errors in the translation weren't too embarrassing for me, but it's always a very interesting experience because I don't speak or understand Chinese, and so I don't actually have an ability myself to understand how good the translation is. But one thing you can see in this unretouched video is the video is showing just how low the latency is, how quickly the system responds, and how seamlessly and easily it integrates with one speech. The progress has just been really quite astounding. Now, as we think about that, we think about different modes of research. When we first just think about, is it possible to use machine learning to improve the ability of a computer to understand human speech? Is it possible to use machine learning to improve itself as it has more experience listening to humans speak? That is an example of what I refer to as blue sky research. It's really curiosity-driven and just open-ended, just trying to gain depth of understanding and solve some hard problems. It is the kind of research which is really just pure discovery and directed at pure exploration. But then when we actually try to put pieces together and build a system that can make a demonstration like that, that's what I would call disruptive research. It's research that is aimed at trying to invent some new experience, trying to surprise people, trying to expand what people imagine is possible with computing technology. In fact, disruptive research is research that is taking our learnings from blue sky research and trying to create a larger computing life. And now, if we move from blue sky research to disruptive research, we can take our inventions from disruptive research and try now to dream, can we actually put this technology in the hands of people? And the research that is directed in that way at trying to create tools that are available for everyone is what I call mission-focused research. And so for us at Microsoft, we ended up having a dream. I don't know how many of you use Skype, but Skype is something that is very important to us at Microsoft. It's one of our most important products. And Skype, for us and for me, represents a global democratization of access to telecommunications. It is an enabler to allow people to connect all around the world very easily using the internet. And so now, can we take a tool like Skype and now extend it and endow it with the ability to translate speech across languages? Can we dream of a world and make that world real where Skype is a portal for eliminating the language barrier? And this is now a major mission-focused research project in Microsoft Research, with much of the work going on in Microsoft Research Asia and Microsoft Research Redmond. Now, I don't have a demonstration of this because, in fact, in just about 1 month, we will be releasing for public beta test the first Skype translator for the world. But I would like to show you a short demonstration video of how it will operate. So please watch.
This is Skype translator. It all starts
just as with any other special, you just call someone.
Hello.
But now the difference is, the person you're calling doesn't just like to speak to you right away.
Thanks for sending that email. We really like that sign line, and we are ready to sign on.
Vielen Dank für das Senden der Mails. Wir haben das Design nach. Und wir sind bereit, es unterschreiben.
Darf ich irgendwelche Änderungen?
Do you need any changes?
There was one thing. Could you take the green to a lighter tea?
Könnten Sie das Grün durch einen helleren Farbton ändern?
Ja, wir können das Grün wieder rein.
Yes, we can make the green much brighter. I'm sending you a new file tonight.
That sounds great, mate. I look forward to it.
The discussed concept is a full human-to-human interaction that crosses the language. It's truly a magical experience.
We're just incredibly excited about this. I have to be honest, this is also a project that for me, working in Microsoft Research is scary. What will be, in fact, the great experience that people will have when we finally release this? But part of the excitement of computing research is the possibility of engaging in mission-focused activities like this and making things real and available for people. Now, one might assume that actually creating something like the Skype translator is just nothing more than engineering and product development. But in fact, one of the things that we learn is that when you actually try to make things real in the world, new problems, new fundamental research problems come up. New ideas and, in fact, new science and new opportunities for discovery and exploration arise. And this was definitely true in creating the Skype translator. One of the reasons for this is that, first of all, Skype is a massive, massive distributed system. In fact, there are hundreds of millions of active users of Skype. And in fact, today, almost a trillion minutes of talk time are using Skype every single month. So the scale is enormous, and it's global. And so the distributed systems challenges in providing speech recognition, machine translation, and text-to-speech synthesis is just incredibly challenging. The distributed systems research challenges are enormous and very exciting, and we're learning new things about large-scale distributed systems every day as we tackle this challenge. But also in language processing, we are learning new things. And one reason is that, as you saw in the demonstration where my speech was being converted into Chinese, well, when I lecture or give a speech, I speak in a very formal way. But when people talk to each other in Skype, they actually converse in different ways. So, for example, you know, someone might say, yeah, but it was, you know, it was, I guess, it was worth it. I'm sure some of you do that. And what that actually, of course, means is, yeah, I guess it was worth it. And it matters to understand this correctly because the translations, for example, into German are vividly different. And so exactly how the Skype translation system should understand how people speak and to what liberties it should take in order to clean up how we speak are very deep questions. They're deep questions not only in speech recognition and language translation, but they're deep questions about human psychology and cognitive science and human-computer interaction. And it matters also because doing this wrong can really send the wrong signals. So, for example, someone might say this in Spanish, Tienes una hija no es muy preciosa. That's very bad Spanish. And what is actually meant to be said there is something like this, where there's punctuation around the word no. But think about it. When you speak to someone on Skype or by the telephone, you don't actually speak the punctuation. There are very subtle cues about punctuation. And missing the punctuation can make a big difference. Because what was meant to be said here is, you have a daughter, right? She's very beautiful. But without the punctuation, you can have an embarrassing translation. And so a tremendous amount of new research and a tremendous amount of new opportunity for exploration and discovery is given to us by embarking on the mission-focused research quest to enable Skype with speech-to-speech translation. Another kind of challenge is something called disfluencies. And so, again, this is an example of how someone might speak. No, I mean yes, but I've never done it myself. Have you done that? Yes. We as humans have little trouble understanding each other, but these kinds of disfluencies, fillers, discourse markers, repetition, speech repairs, these are things that we somehow have no trouble understanding, but can be tremendously confusing for speech-to-speech translation system. And so in our mission-focused work to create the Skype translator, we've had to really invent completely new science in order to deal with these kinds of disfluencies. And so, for example, we now do a tremendous amount of work in a multi-stage pass to, first of all, eliminate the first layer of disfluencies, then do appropriate segmentation to give us a chance to infer the filler pauses, infer punctuation, remove more disfluencies before finally getting to a translation from English to English before we embark on translating to Mandarin or to Spanish or to German or whatever language we're trying to create as the target. And so the amount that we're learning from all this is really just incredible. So we have tremendous opportunities to affect computing life, but also new opportunities in computing research in the blue sky domain, in the disruptive domain, in the mission-focused domain. But even there, it doesn't stop. And even as we are nearing the completion of the beta test system for Skype Translator, we think even more about what other possibilities are there in endowing computers with the ability to understand human speech, understand human language. And one of the very exciting developments here in MSRA has been the development of Xiao-Eis. And if you haven't used this, you really must. It's just tremendous. In fact, I always get a kick out of seeing that people sometimes don't know if Xiao-Eis is a person or a chatbot. In fact, Xiao-Eis is an artificially intelligent system that understands a tremendous amount about how to make conversations with people. And it has been an incredible, incredible experience for us. This was released at the end of May this year. And to our surprise, within the first 3 days, we had over 10 million users. And since that time, we have witnessed that people have more than 1,000 conversations on average with Xiao-Eis every month. I don't even have a friend that talks to me that much. And so it's incredible that people do this. And in fact, this is, we believe now, given a recent deal that has been made, now an opportunity to have the first AI-based spokesperson for third-party products and services. It's really incredible. And so even as we finish the Skype Translator and learn so much about how people talk to each other, we have new opportunities to bring technologies into new forms in this mobile environment in China. And so as I look at these forms of research, starting with blue sky research to just understand machine learning's role and application in speech and language processing, and then disruptive research to invent a new technology, a new experience in speech-to-speech translation, and then the mission-focused work to try to take that technology and put it in tools that are available to everyone in the world, and then to take our learnings and find new applications and new experiences for people. For me, this makes a pipeline of blue sky research to surprising innovations. We have a pipeline that goes from a fountain of work in blue sky work, inventive work, mission-focused work and then sustaining work. And in the management of Microsoft Research, we take all of these different modes of research and imagine how we allocate our resources around them. And if you imagine this as a two-dimensional space, along the x-axis are investments in research that are sometimes very short-term investments, research activities where we want a quick answer. And as we go out on the x-axis, we have research activities where we need patience, where we need to stick to things, maybe even for a decade or more. And then on the y-axis, we have the choices of problems, where we have some problems that are very reactive, where we want to help someone in the world solve a problem. And then as we move up the y-axis, we have more open-ended, curiosity-driven research. And then as I think about the management of Microsoft Research, this space is cut into quadrants. And what we see here is the pipeline from blue sky research to sustaining innovations being mapped very nicely into these four quadrants. And in Microsoft Research, and in particular in Microsoft Research Asia, we try to honor and provide support for all four modes of research: mission-focused, sustaining, blue sky, and disruptive. It really keeps the pipeline full and keeps us all very excited about what we're doing in the future. And I can hardly wait to see what we have coming up next. And so with that, I hope you have a little flavor of how we think about the intersection of computing research with computing life, and how we try to make computing research and computing life come alive in Microsoft Research. Thank you very much for your attention. It was really a great privilege to speak to you.